You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is a very timely conversation. A lot of people had tons of questions for Emily. We're talking with Emily Auster today. Her book, The Family Firm, just came out. She has some other awesome books like Expecting Better and Crib Sheet. If you are a parent, these books are super informative. And also just Emily's account in general is very informative if you're a parent or just around any children at all. So I highly encourage you to follow her account. I've been following it for a little bit now and just find it to be very informative and sometimes calming for me with especially a lot of the COVID stuff going on. So we are going to talk to Emily. A lot of questions were submitted, so I'm going to try to get to as many of them as possible. Just to give you a quick overview, her book talks about a variety of different topics like nutrition, extracurricular activities for your child, sleep, school, screen time. There are a lot of questions on screen time. Emily also talks a lot about COVID and children, so we'll talk a little bit about that, and also responsibilities and rules. So let's just have her come in right now so we can because again, there were a ton of questions and I actually have a lot of the same questions myself as a new parent. Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great. Thank you so much for taking time to do this. I was just watching your stories and seeing that you're answering questions up to the very moment. How's your finger feeling?
No, it's okay. It's all like wrapped up and drawn on and other stuff, but we're cool.
Oh, good. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, I love all the stuff that you do. I was just saying that I love following your account as a new mom and just being able to see all the questions. You do a lot of Q&As on your stories, which as a parent and a new parent, especially, I find to be very helpful and informative. And your book obviously is the same, super informative and just really great and thorough. And I had a lot of questions that were submitted that people want to get to. So I think for this today, we're going to focus on screen time, COVID and kids and responsibilities. But before we get into that, just because I love the whole concept of this, of your book, which is all about parenting deliberately, can we talk a little bit just about kind of what that means for you and what it can mean for other people?
Yeah. So I think the idea of parenting deliberately here just really means like approaching your parenting decisions in a way that takes seriously that each decision is going to have implications for other decisions and sort of really stepping back sometimes and saying, hey, like, what do I want my life to look like? You know, how do I want to structure my day? How do I want to think through my decisions? And almost like taking a breath and rather than the kind of every moment part of parenting saying like, okay, what's really important? What are the things I want to prioritize? Let's write them down. Let's agree if there's multiple partners on what are the things we think are important. And then, you know, that's going to help shape the life that we want and the days that we live, really.
Yeah. I love that. And I also love that it goes along with kind of coming up with your family mission statement, which I think is such a great concept and idea because we come up with mission statements for our work and for, you know, what we do in other areas and doing it for your family is also, of course, makes total sense and is really helpful. Can you talk a little bit about the idea of coming up with a mission statement for your family and how that helps you long-term in parenting deliberately?
Yeah. So I think the mission statement has sort of one piece, which is like just what's your like one liner? But then also has this sort of like, what are your really your sort of top, like there's a part of your mission that's what are the top three things that we really are sort of trying to get to or that we want to prioritize. And I think the reason for me to sort of talk about that and write it down and try to get on the same page is if we can do that, then we always have it like a touchstone. So when we sort of come to something where there's conflict or there's disagreement or we have to make a hard choice, it's like, hey, what are we trying? Like, what are we really trying to do? Like, we agreed we're really trying to do this. How does whatever choice we're making fit into that idea, into that like central, central plan? And I think that's, for me, that like having something we have agreed on is really helpful when there are points at which like inevitably there will be pieces that we don't agree on or places where we differ in what we're trying to do.
And how often do you adjust that mission statement? Because I know it said in your book to kind of recap on it when your kids go into elementary school, because a lot of, you know, your time is changed, your schedule is changed when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think this sort of broad mission statement is probably not that different over time. I think the pieces that you really want to revisit are kind of what do we want to prioritize? What are the things that are going to be really kind of important in these moments? And what do we want to make sure we're doing every day? So there's a little bit of like a practical part of this, which is like, hey, part of what you want to get on the same page about is, you know, are we going to have dinner together every night? Are we going to have breakfast together in the morning? Are we like, and those things are going to change some as your kids get older and your family gets more complicated and there's more kids and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. One of the biggest topics aside from the COVID topics was the screen time. And I myself, have questions on this too. My daughter just turned one. And you have a section in your book, you talk a lot about screen time, and there's, you know, positives to it. The fact that we've been in COVID, kids have had access to, you know, do schooling from home. You can connect with people that, you know, COVID has made incredibly challenging and complicated. You maintain relationships. So those are the positive parts about it. And then the negatives are that, you know, kids are less active. They're in front of a screen all day. Also kind of their social skills are, I think, affected by that. Can you speak, just before we get into the questions, just a little bit about the kind of positive and negatives that you're seeing when it comes to the topic of screen time in kids?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that you kind of exactly have hit on it, which is that there's like these kind of things that are very good about screens, and they are really a lot of them about connection. And that would even extend to things like, you know, kids playing interactive video games, you know, for like during the last year, especially in the parts of it when kids were like pretty isolated from their peers, there was something really great for a lot of kids about being able to like play Fortnite with their friends, because like that was the way that they could see, you know, they could see their friends. And we'd sort of say a similar thing about some social media stuff and about little kids using FaceTime. Like, it was awfully nice last year that like your 1-year-old is probably like a FaceTime genius.
Right.
You know, and that wasn't true, right? So there are some things that are really good, that are sort of really good about that. But, you know, on the flip side, like, you know, screens are like, they're an easy way to do that instead of something else. You know, particularly this sort of like, they can become something that is more than you want them to be. And I think in some ways that's really the balance that we're trying to hit, that, you know, if you were spending all your time on screens, you're not doing other things. On the other hand, there are these sort of positive pieces as well.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
I was reading books when I was pregnant just about screen time and children and parenting. And obviously this was pre-COVID. And one of the books that I had read was talking about, you know, not allowing your child to have any screen time, whether it's TV, phone, iPad, until at least the age of two, and how that can affect having ADD or ADHD, et cetera. For parents who want to know when is the appropriate age to introduce screen time, when would you suggest that would be?
So I think first I want to say, like, that sort of guidance that you're hearing there, like, there's not data on that. There's not good data that says that somehow, like, kids who see screens when they're one are, you know, worse in some way or have problems in some way that other kids don't. Like, there's just not a lot of data behind those. Certainly not a lot of convincing data behind those restrictions. And so I think based on everything I have seen in this space, the right way to think about screens for little kids, probably the same way, right way to think about screens for older kids, which is you want to sort of think about where they fit in your sort of where they fit in your life and where is, what would they be doing otherwise? So if your 1 year old would otherwise be like engaging in a fun, you know, activity, like sitting around with you, like playing blocks on the floor, whatever it is, that's, you know, maybe that's better than TV in a moment. But, you know, if you need a break to like take a shower, or if you want to like, you need to make dinner or there's something else going on, it's not clear that the screen, there's anything particularly wrong with the screen. And so I think we sometimes get into this idea with both little kids and older kids that screens are inherently a bad, as opposed to thinking about them as they are one thing that you do. And if you did them exclusively, that would be problematic, but they can fit easily into a life with a lot of different, things in there.
So when you're thinking about screen time, whether it's for younger kids or, elementary school kids, thinking about it in the sense that, like, if I'm giving my child the iPad right now and let's say they're 10 years old, you're giving them the iPad, it would be helpful to think to ourselves, what would they be doing if I was not giving them the iPad? Like, would they be doing something outside instead and then take a minute to think about it?
Yeah, not in that minute though. So I think that, like, one of the mistakes that we make is thinking about this in the moment. And that leads to, like, that's just going to lead to conflict because your kid wants the iPad and you're like, wait a minute, let me think about, you know? So I think that the argument is almost like think in advance. Right. When is screen time going to fit in? What is the rule going to be? Is screen time like an hour a day before, you know, before dinner? Is it screen time an hour a day after school? Is it 2 hours on the weekend, but not, but not during, whatever is the set of rules where you've thought about, like, what are the pieces we want in our day and where could screens fit in there? Mm-hmm. I think sort of there's that. And then to communicate those rules in a consistent manner, those are kind of the two keys. So it's not like in this moment, it's the sort of like the broader picture about how you can get them, how you can get this to fit in your life in a way that it doesn't interfere with stuff that you think is that important or other things a kid would be doing, but recognizes like everybody needs a break and there's nothing inherently bad about television.
Is screen time the same thing? Because obviously, you know, when I myself and my siblings were growing up, we were watching, you know, cartoons very minimally, but like that was our screen time. And then now you have iPads, computers, cell phones, so many different things. Are those all considered to be the same screen time or are there worse versions of screen time?
I think that there are, better and worse versions of screen time, but mostly it's about what's appropriate for your kid. Right. And, you know, I think that I had an argument with my daughter last night, who's 10, about YouTube. So she mm-hmm. watches like clips on YouTube of America's Got Talent, but we have like a rule that you cannot watch other things on YouTube without checking with me mm-hmm. because YouTube is full of crazy stuff. And it's not that I don't trust her. I don't trust YouTube. And so, you know, that's a place where I think that there are things that she could see that she couldn't unsee that I do not want to have her see. I think where people sometimes get into issues there is probably overselling the screens is it's, if you're doing math games, that's good. Well, I'm not sure that math games are really this isn't the best way to learn math. And it's not clear that math and maybe it'll be better if they just took some time to took 15 minutes to do some math and then were allowed to watch whatever they want. And then they could watch cartoons like you did, I did, MacGyver. I like MacGyver. Yeah. You're probably too young for MacGyver.
I watched a lot of Sesame Street.
Nice.
And then when it comes to the amount of time, I feel like that was a big topic, especially over the past year of how much time we should be allowing kids to be on devices or having screen time. Is there anything that you would say with that?
I mean, I think again, this got very complicated last year because of online school.
Right.
And because of people's feeling that basically my kid is already in front of the screen all day. And now they're going to be get more in front of the screen. And I think that there is, there is some sort of real argument for that. This moment is an opportunity, as our kids are going back to school or back to daycare, returning to sort of some more sense of normalcy, it's an opportunity to kind of revisit some of that and say, okay, okay, last year happened. It happened when it happened. Let's put it aside. It's over now. Hopefully. And this is an opportunity to kind of think about what is the right amount of screens given our sort of current life with in-person schooling and so on.
Okay. And then my final screen time question is the past year, as you mentioned with, FaceTime, and I have a one-year-old with babies in the past year that were born, we were able to connect a lot of the time, introduce babies to people via FaceTime. Babies obviously had more screen time, I'm assuming, than previous generations because there wasn't as much of that. Are those moments of FaceTime considered to be screen time for babies?
No, that's not screen time. No, okay. That's not screen time.
Wonderful. No. So that's not damaging to their eyes or their brain.
That's not this thing. No, that's it's fine.
Okay. Wonderful. Okay. So responsibilities and rules. That was another topic that a lot of people wanted to know about as far as, having clear rules and responsibilities in your home with your children and at what age is the correct age to start discussing those with your kids and also expecting that from your child?
Pretty much any age that they can talk and understand what you're saying. And the question is just what are the things you're expecting of them? I think that I like to think about this by starting by working backwards. By the time my kid leaves for college, I want her to be able to get her meals and cook for something for herself and, get her own clothes. I want her to be a functional human by the time she's 18. So I don't want to introduce all of that when she is 17. Right. Yeah. I want to sort of introduce it slowly. So by the time we get there, we're we're kind of in a good place. And so I think that partly means bringing things into the fold or as early as possible. So your four-year-old, they cannot fully get themselves ready for everything, but they could probably get their pants on. Right. Yeah. So saying your responsibility is in the morning, your responsibility is to get your pants on. And, then maybe a few months later, they can also get their shirt on. You sort of build up over, build up over time with the idea that, eventually they become adults.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
When it comes to discipline for children, at what age would that start or starting to have consequences for not doing, let's say if you have rules in your house to make your bed every day or to do little things like that, what does that look like for you?
So I think there I would distinguish between discipline and sort of what you're talking about, which is like responsibility. Right. So there's a sort of carrot and a, so there are some behaviors that kids engage in that need to be disciplined, and that people take a different kinds of views about discipline. You know, I tend to like these sort of like consistent, like warning and then, and then timeout or some kind of loss of privilege consequence. But that's not for like, you didn't make your bed. That's for like, you know, you're being rude or you're like hitting your sibling or you didn't listen to what I was saying. Like that's sort of the space of discipline. Then there's like incentivizing sort of performing your responsibilities. And some of that, that's not a place where discipline is likely to work well or probably be appropriate from like a sort of child psychology standpoint. I think it's more about the combination of, you know, potentially like, is there a way you earn your allowance with doing that or sort of things in that right. space? Or it's about just like, we're all a family and we all have responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think in our family, we go much more for like, everyone in the family has responsibilities. Mom's responsibility is to like do almost everything, it would seem. and dad has also some responsibilities.
Yeah.
And kids have the kids' responsibilities are like to do these things that we've agreed are their responsibilities. And like, that's their job.
Yeah.
And you know, we all try to contribute so we can like have a nice family.
Yeah. So it's more about like the responsibilities, like feeding the dog or taking a dog on a walk, those kinds
exactly.
of things being family responsibilities. And then when it comes to one sibling hitting another sibling, doing it as more
that's
of like,
discipline.
Yeah. And, yeah. and when it comes to discipline in that way, is there an age that that's appropriate to start?
So, we use a lot of this book, 1-2-3 Magic, which kind of sort of says something in the space of like two to three, is like an age at which you could start with the idea of like, there's warnings and timeouts or consequences.
Can you explain one. Reading about the 1-2-3 Magic? Can you explain just for people who don't know about 1-2-3 Magic, just what that is and your logic behind it of kind of like the gradual, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one approach in a suite of different like parenting approaches, sort of like this approach to discipline where, you know, if a kid is continually like punching their sibling or refusing to buckle their seatbelt, which is a thing that happens a lot for some reason, it just happened the other day. It's like on my mind. So the first thing is, you know, that's a warning. Or you can count or you have some consistent framing where there's like, you know, that's a warning. That's a second warning. That's a timeout or loss of privilege. Whatever is the sort of thing that you choose for the consequence. I think the sort of central thing there is to try the central thing in these philosophies is to try to be consistent, and do the same thing every time and have everybody do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the kids know what to expect. And the second piece of it, and this is like the much harder piece as a parent, is to like not get mad. So like a sort of central feature of this like discipline idea is that like, I'm not angry. I'm just like, this isn't what we're doing. So like there's a timeout, you're in the timeout, and then we don't talk about it anymore. Like you went in the timeout, we don't revisit it. We don't like at the end of the timeout, it's not like, let's talk about like all the ways you should feel shame. It's just like, you had a timeout, we're moving on. That's it. And I'm not getting mad at you. I'm not like screaming at you. I'm not certainly not hitting you. I'm just careful, warning consistently, timeout, move on.
Yeah. And is there, cause I know I follow a lot of other parents and also talk to a lot of other parents. And there is like a part of it that I feel like if you do a timeout that sometimes people do, there is like not a pressure, but kind of like a feeling like, do we want to talk about it again? Do you want to go over it? Can you explain the logic behind not doing that and moving on, which I think is a great idea?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the logic there sort of largely surrounds the fact that, kids are not really in a position to like discuss this the way that adults would be. Right. And so I think it's easy. I think it's actually in some ways it's harder when your kid is pretty verbal. So if you have a kid who talks a lot, they can kind of like, you can kind of get into a place of thinking, oh, they'll be able to discuss like, why did you do that? Why? But like the answer to like, why did my kid not want to like buckle in his seatbelt? Like he could tell me it's because I didn't want the like low sugar peach candies. I wanted an entire like bag of Chex Mix. Right. Mm-hmm. It's like that sort of why. That's not really why. The like broader why is like, I don't know. I was tired. It was a long day. I didn't want to do this thing. Like whatever it is. And the thing is, it doesn't really matter why, because that behavior is not okay. And so I think it's a little bit about sort of meeting kids where they are appropriate developmentally and also not like just prolonging this thing, just like, okay, we're going to move on and like try to get to the next better moment because kids are fast.
Yeah. they have short attention spans. Okay. So moving now on to COVID and kids, because I know that's a big topic that you talk about. It's also a big topic that I feel like as a new mom in the past year, and even during pregnancy, it's like what every parent is talking about, no matter what the age of your child, it's for newborn to whatever. And especially with schools going back in, I know you answer a ton of these questions. Yep.
So it's the same question every week. It's good. Okay. We need more of it.
Yeah. So the first thing, and I know you talked a little bit about this on your stories today, when it comes to having a baby in a pandemic, I had my daughter a year ago, introducing to people, whether it's family, friends, whatever. FaceTime is obviously a huge, great part of being able to do that in some version. But what is the kind of the golden rule when it comes to a newborn baby or a one-year-old baby and introduce, obviously a newborn is a totally different situation than a one-year-old, but let's just start with newborn. What's the kind of protocol on introducing a newborn to people?
Yeah. So I think one thing to say about like totally putting COVID aside, newborn infants need more protection for the first like 6 to 8 weeks than an older child would, because they are more susceptible to bacterial infections. Mm-hmm. And so they could get sicker if they were exposed to something. And they are the sort of response of the medical system to any kind of fever is more extreme. So you always want to be like quite a bit more careful with a newborn, even like totally independent of anything about COVID. That kind of dials down after like 6 to 8 weeks after they've had their first set of shots. Mm-hmm. When we then think about sort of kids and their risk and so on, kids are quite low risk for COVID, particularly quite low risk for serious illness. And that's just like, we're just seeing that even though they are unvaccinated, they're actually like, your baby is a lower risk for serious illness from COVID than you are, even if you are fully vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of important to keep in mind as we think about some of these things, that there is real value to kids, in seeing other people in person. Now, different families are going to write different, like, rules about like who they are going to who they're going to be willing to see and what kind of rules they're going to write around that seeing vaccinated people is going to be safer than seeing unvaccinated people in terms of COVID exposure.
And is that true even with the Delta variant? Because I had seen a couple weeks ago someone had asked you a question about people traveling in from town. And your advice on, do they quarantine and then get tested before seeing the children, or do they come right into the home, right off of an airplane? What would be your recommendation with this new variant coming around?
So, I think we're going to be able to make better decisions if we kind of think carefully about what vaccines do. Vaccines prevent serious illness and death, and they're going to turn COVID ultimately into something that is endemic, not pandemic. Something that we live with, but you know, isn't influencing all of our decisions. And if, you know, you're talking about a set of fully vaccinated people and you are fully vaccinated and your kids are low risk, then I think a reasonable approach would be to say, we can all get together when you get off the airplane, and, you know, we're going to be a little more careful than we might have been pre-COVID. And perhaps we'll take some rapid tests if that makes us, you know, feel better. And certainly we'll not get together if people are sick. But I think this is a place where for the next, at least probably the next few months, people are going to differ a lot in how they approach this because their individual risk tolerances are different.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially, and I know you talked a little bit about this today on your Instagram, but when it comes to people thinking about the holidays already, which it seems like people are already doing, if you're thinking about, you know, gathering with people, obviously I know you had mentioned with a newborn and not doing that, but if you're thinking about people traveling and coming into the home and you have children that are unvaccinated, is the protocol still just kind of whatever is comfortable for your family, or what is the kind of risk factor there?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's going to be what's comfortable for you. And kids, again, your kids are very low risk. By then it's possible we'll have vaccines for kids, which I think for some set of people will make people feel better. Not everyone's going to want to do that. In my view, I think we are underusing tests. And my guess is that by the time we get to winter, there's going to be a lot more push for sort of pretty consistent use of rapid tests and other kinds of sort of testing approaches in doing those family gatherings. So I would kind of like to see a world in which, like, this sort of like magical fairy world that Michael Mina has been like trying to achieve since, you know, March of 2020, where like, before we get together for the holidays, everybody takes a rapid test before they leave their house. And that's it. Like, just the entire country has a bunch of free rapid tests and everybody takes one before they leave their house. And that's the way we do the holidays. And that, you know, that's not going to eliminate every single transmission, but it would dial it down. It would dial it down a lot. I'm not sure that'll happen.
Yeah. So you think that the rapid tests are something to be reliable with, because people have, you know, a variety of different thoughts about like a rapid test, order at home tests, are you doing it properly versus, you know, going to a clinic and getting it done?
Yeah. You know, I think we got totally caught up in the idea that like rapid tests are not perfect. Mm-hmm. That it's right. Like rapid tests are not perfect. You know, they're going to pick up about 90% of contagious infections, of infectious cases of COVID. That's not 100%. And we're certainly going to see cases in which there are false negatives there. And that is like, but if you eliminated 90% of the infectious people from some pool, that's really quite a lot better than having 100% of the infectious people. And I think that's sort of the key.
Okay. A lot of parents had written in asking about just overall protection and protocol for keeping children that are in the unvaccinated group safe from COVID, you know, obviously right now, but also especially going into holiday season, your best practices when it comes to that.
So my best practices when it comes to that are, you know, when your kids are going to be around other people inside, I would typically have them wear a mask. Not everybody agrees with that, but if my kids wear a mask when they're inside, at least at the moment. And then I will rapid test them before we see my family and have everybody do it. And that's kind of all there is.
So is that your kids being around unvaccinated people indoors or vaccinated people indoors?
If my kids are around, no, if they're at school, if they were on unvaccinated people inside, like at school, they wear a mask. And if they're inside with people on like a play date, I probably have them wear a mask.
Okay. And then if they happen to be inside your children, unvaccinated, if they happen to be inside at another couple's house that is, and they're fully vaccinated, do you have them wear a mask indoors or no?
No.
Okay. When it comes to, which this is something that I always think about when it comes to just like the amount of hand washing and Purell that we're doing. And then you have children. I have my 1-year-old, which I've mentioned. What is the effect? And my mom recently, 2 days ago, sent me an article about like our level of sanitation.
Too much, right?
Yeah. And how that will affect the immune systems of kids and the importance of being messy, eating dirt, being around, you know, bacteria, things like that at a young age and that building your immune system. Can you speak to that at all and what effect that will have?
So I'm not, you know, I mean, I'm in favor of eating dirt. I like my children to eat dirt. You know, I think that the, it is true that we are going to see a fair amount of kind of like immune deficit in kids like your kid, who was just not like, who was not exposed to things for a year. And this is, you know, part of why we're seeing a lot of RSV in the South, which is a different virus, which actually is not somewhat more dangerous for kids. We're seeing a lot of that because they were not exposed during COVID. And so there is this sort of a little bit of this immune deficit. Like we're all going to, you know, people get sick, like people get sick over time. And that is, and that's going to happen more for these kids that were kind of not exposed, to some of these illnesses, early on. You know, I think one of the things that is going to be true is our, this next generation of kids, I think it's just going to get less sick as kids than sort of we did, in part because some of the adaptations that we have made to COVID, we will retain. And so I think the expectation of like, you know, like, can you send your kid to school when they're like a little sick? Like, that's not good. We're not going to be doing as much of that as we were before. And my guess is we'll still see some masking during flu season, at least, you know, by choice, for some people, just because those of us who had kids in school last year, like they didn't get sick. Like my kids didn't get sick all year. Like no, not even a norovirus. Nobody vomited. There's no vomiting. It was a very, very limited illness. And that was like, it was sort of nice. I mean, I don't like to vomit.
Okay. And then I know we're kind of getting to time, but just before we end, a lot of people, especially moms of young children, when it comes to mask wearing, you know, I think having masks in schools for young children, especially unvaccinated, is obviously very important. I know people are very opinionated about it. I think that it's obviously a good thing to be doing. When it comes to children who are growing up with mask wearing, is there anything when it comes to what people think, if there will be any psychological effects of seeing people in masks at all?
So people talk about that. I think, you know, realistically, there isn't particularly any reason to think that like kids will have, you know, problems. There will be adaptations that are different than saying that there will be problems. So, you know, kids in Asia who see a lot more mask things tend to be better at like reading emotions in eyes than kids in the West who more frequently have seen mouths. Mm-hmm. So maybe there will be some things like that. I think the place where there's more sort of legitimate concerns about this are in both speech development and reading development. So teaching a kid to read, you actually kind of do need them to see your mouth, or at least it's much easier if they can see your mouth. And similarly for speech, for younger kids. So I do think there is going to be need to be some adaptation for that. And I would like to, I would like it to be the case that we could write some off ramps for this masking. And that, you know, I think it's a good idea for kids to be in now, but like we cannot have this in a decade and we kind of need to figure out how to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, this was super informative and thank you so much for taking time to do this and answering so many of the questions. And I know we went a little bit over, but thank you.
Thank you. This is awesome. Thank you so much.
On your book. We'll make sure to put it. And this is awesome and so helpful. So thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.